We're holding on some Chedal Amud Beis by the Mishnah. The previous Mishnah talked about a case of a person who was Tomei, and we say that if there was a source of Tumah over there where he went to Tobel, then he's Tomei because Cheskas Tomei, Cheskas Tarotar. We said Shiraglayim Hadavar, that we have a logical basis to assume that the person is still Tomei. So now, based on that, then we're going to go through a couple. Most of the rest of the parak is going to go through a couple of Mishnayos on topics that don't, in and of themselves, directly have to do with Masechta Nazir, but where also you have this concept of Raglayim L'Davar, that we have a logical basis to base an assumption on, even though by itself we might not have.
What's Raglayim L'Davar for Sina Israel?
Come on. So the Mishnah says, Hamoitza Mes V'Tchila Mushkav Kedarchei. If somebody is digging in his field and he finds, to begin with, one dead body lying at the beginning, lying in its normal position, meaning lying in its normal position, the Gemara will explain what that means, but basically lying in the position in which Jewish burials are normally done. The Rishami says that it means actually that the body is lying flat with its hands on its chest. Nowadays, actually, most Chevra Kedishas don't do that. Usually when they bury somebody nowadays, they usually bury them with their hands at their sides. And Geshur HaChaim, he says the only time nowadays they do with the hands on the chest is if, like, there's not enough room or whatever, or the ground is too hard to be able to dig out a full-size cave or whatever, but there's a certain standard position, more or less, that Jewish burials are done in. A lot of this stuff is just a matter of minute. So as far as I know, pretty much everywhere they just do with the hands at the sides. In Geshur HaChaim, Tukhachinsky mentioned that he brings from this Yerushalmi that talks about that Kedarkei meant like this, and he says nowadays they only do that like if they don't have any room. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. So, he's allowed to remove the body. What? Yeah, I don't know. We didn't do it, but I don't know. All right, okay. Yeah, he's asking about the minhag that they put, that the children put dust on the eyes of the mess before the burial. I don't know. Okay, anyway. Note liver est trusasi. You're allowed to remove the body, to rebury it someplace else, but you have to bring along trusasi. Trusasi, or on the side here it says tivusasi. Tfusase would mean Meloshin Tfisa, what is Tofis, like with a part of the ground that the mess has sort of acquired and that comes along with him. Tfusase would be Meloshin Mispesesis Pedamayich, like wallowing in it. That would mean, in other words, as the Gemara will explain, the dirt that may have absorbed some of the fluids and whatnot from the mess. Either way, so I mean, we're dealing with the issue here of removing a mess from one place and reburying it in someplace else. It gets pretty complicated. I mean, here the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Gemara are not really getting into all the dinim that are involved in that. It gets pretty complicated. You know, in Israel, every so often you have headlines where they're doing excavations for a road or a hospital or what have you, and they find ancient burials, and it becomes a whole thing. Now, there are some pretty complicated dinim involved, but here we're not really getting into it. There are various cases where you are allowed to move a body. One of them is if you're going to be reburying it in Eretz Yisrael. Another is if you're going to be reburying it in land that belongs to this person, as opposed to, let's say, it was buried someplace else, or it was only a temporary burial. There's a number of cases. So Shnayim, similarly, if he finds two bodies, Neutlan Vest Tfusas, and also he can take them along with their Tfusa and move them someplace else. We don't have to worry so far, in other words, that this was originally designed as a basic chloris, which in which case you have a different issue, it's also Bana. Like this, if you find only one or two, then you can move them. And Rashi points out also it means at that point you're allowed to walk anywhere you want in that field once the one or two Mesim and their Tfusa has been removed, you don't have to worry that there's more Tumah around. But Matza Shloisha, if you find three bodies, Im Yesh Ben Zelazemi Dalat Amisvat Shmoina, if between the first and last body you have anywhere between 4 and 8 Amos, Tarid Shchunas Kvaris. Then at that point, you say it's not just incidental burial, now this is a Shchunas Kvaris. This is a graveyard.
Right?
No, in horizontally, or horizontally, in any direction. The reason why from 4 to 8 is like this. The Gemara discussed, we have a diagram there in the art scroll. The Gemara explained. The Gemara discusses in Bava Basra about the normal arrangement of in those days they didn't used to bury. You know, nowadays what do? They dig from the surface. They dig an open grave. They place the mess in it, and then they cover it with dirt. In those days, in very often the minhag was instead that they would dig. They dig out a courtyard in open to the sky. Around it they dig out some caves, and then in the walls of those caves you would have niches, and each niche you would put one mess in that niche. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about the goyel and dovik. There are some mafarshim explain goyel literally means something that you roll, so it would mean like after they put the mess in the aron into the niche, they would roll a stone over there in front of the niche to prevent the mess from sliding out, and therefore it's called a goyel. So the Mishnah describes over there how they would arrange it. There's actually two different opinions, but the opinion of the Chachamim over there is there'd be the one central chotzer, which would be like where you'd have the Levaya, sort of, and then you'd have one cave going in this direction from it, the other going in the other direction, and around each cave you would have, like they show over here, a whole bunch of niches. You'd have six niches along the long walls of the cave, and three along the short wall. All together in each.
They wouldn't pile up, in other words.
No, so there wouldn't be one on top of the other. Now, you're only allowed to bury one mess on top of another if there's a certain minimum vertical distance between them, 6 tefachim, I think, or something. Or 6 tefachim, I think, in a pinch, whatever. I think more discussed. So there were lots of places in Europe in the old days also where they ended up having in Frankfurt and Prague and other places where just they ran out of room in the cemeteries and the Goyim wouldn't allow them to expand it. But as the Gemara discusses, Bava Basra over there, even according to the opinion of Reb Shimon over there, you have a central courtyard, and then you have four caves going off from it in an X shape, and then from each one of them you have niches coming out. So the Gemara ends up saying that you're going to have some of the niches are necessarily going to have to be above others. But for now, we're dealing primarily according to Chachamim, that nothing has to cross over anything else. You just have the central chotzer, one cave this way, one cave this way, and a bunch of niches around it for Mason. Now, so therefore, so how do you, so why are we saying between 4 and 8 amos? Is because if we take the view that the cave itself is supposed to be 4 by 8 amos, then 4 amos would be, for example, if you ended up by accident digging up one grave on one side of the cave, and then another one in the niche opposite it on the other side of the cave, then they're 4 amos apart. And if you go from one end to the other, then you're going to have 8 amos. That's why we're saying between 4 and 8 amos.
It's a rectangle,
yeah. And Tosfos also discusses the possibility that you might also, it also comes into the picture that you might have, that you ended up digging up, let's say, one here and one here, so you went kind of on a diagonal. Because remember, you're finding Mason that may have been buried there hundreds of years earlier. You know, the thing has long since been forgotten. So not necessarily when you start digging are you necessarily digging in the direction of the original cave. You might be digging at an angle to them. Whatever it is, so if the graves are between 4 and 8 amos apart, hareza shchunas kvaros, so then what you found is a shchunas kvaros, you found an old cemetery. Therefore you can't move any of those graves. At that point already we say that those they have to stay where they have to stay for it. Now what you do is you have to start checking from that point onward, from where you found the last mess. You have to move 20 amos away and check there as well. Why 20 amos? So the Gemara actually in Bava Basra discusses the details. Again, you have the two different opinions over there about the size of the central courtyard and the cave. According to the Tanakhama, it would come out 18. It would come out 18. Amos from one end to the other. If you have, let's say, imagine that the ones you dug up first happen to be the ones at this end, and you want to make sure, you want to check whether there are any at that end. So then according to the Rabbanan, it would be 18 Amos, and according to the Shimon, it would be 22. So you might discuss those possibilities over there. Either that, according to the Rabbanan, it's 20 Amos, because you might be going on a diagonal. The straight line would be 18 Amos, but on a diagonal, it would be 20. Another possibility is actually, what if you have, let's say, because of the topography, you might have, let's say, you have the central courtyard, you have one cave directly off it, perpendicular to it, and then you have another one going off on an angle. So for that reason also, you might need 20 amos. And then the Gemara discusses, according to Rav Shimon, you might have the other way around, that it might be that one of those caves was actually set aside to bury infants. In those days, you know, they had high infant mortality. So sometimes you might have that a whole wing of the thing is set aside for nephilim, for babies who died young or stillborn or whatever, and then they take up less room than adults. Either way, the Gemara discusses there in detail how you wind up with 20 amos, and Tosfos and the Rosh discuss it over here. Anyway, Matzah Echad B'Seif Esrim Amos, so now if you find one more mess at the end of the 20 amos, Bode Kemenu L'Halan Esrim Amos, then you have to count another, then you have to paste off another 20 amos from there and check there as well. Same thing, because you may have found, again, part of a whole cemetery over there. And Sh'Raglayim L'Dover, here's where that, this is why our Mishnah comes in over here, because this is another example of Raglayim L'Dover. Let's say, for example, so what are we saying? You started out, you found three mason at this end, let's say. So you're checking 20 amos over here, and let's say you find only one mess. Which could happen. Let's say they didn't end up using all of the niches. They didn't end up filling the Beis HaKvaros before the people left or whatever. So now, if you had originally found that one by himself, you would say it's only one mess. You don't have to worry about it. No, it's levest for sase, as the Mishnah said previously. But because you already started finding three at this end over here, and now this one is 20 amos further, which is the standard length of one of these systems of burial cave, then Raglayim L'Dover. Then we have a reasonable assumption that this mess was not just buried here, this one mess that he found here at this end was not just Samazoi buried here as a temporary thing or something. He must have been buried here as part of the Beis HaKvaros when it was in use. She'ilup t'chila metzoi, because had you found that one mess originally, if you had found that one first, not levest t'fusasi, you would have been able to remove it along with its t'fusa, along with the loose dirt, etc., as we'll learn in the Gemara. But because there we have, this is an example, again, of Raglayim L'Dover, that there we say, because you first found those three, and this one is the proper distance from them, then there's much more logical reason to assume, there's a very strong basis for assuming that it wasn't Sam, a burial, they happened to bury him there. It must have been part of the actual cemetery. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda. The wording in our Mishnah said that the wording was Hamotze mes batchila mushkil kedarkai. If you find a mess at the beginning lying in its normal way, so each of these phrases is teaching us a certain limitation on the din that we just learned. Motza prapla motzri. When it says motza, if he found, means as opposed to if it's one that's already found. Now, what does that mean? There's several different ways that Mephoshim explains. The Tosfos brings that, now, besides our Mishnah and our Gemara over here, there's also a Gemara in Sanhedrin that deals with the whole issue of moving bodies, digging up graves and reburying the people elsewhere. As I was mentioning before you came, it's a very, very complicated topic in Halacha. There's issues of covered mess involved, there's issues of tumor, there's all kinds of issues involved. As a matter of fact, actually, there's at least two Sfarim that have been written on the topic. Rav Shlomo Kluger, one of the great Rabbanim of 150 years or so ago, wrote a whole sefer about it. And Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg, the Sude Eish, who was the head of the rabbinical seminary, the Beis HaMedrash LaRabbanim in Berlin before World War II, also wrote a whole long tshuva, which afterwards he expanded into a kuntres on the subject. Very famous little tidbit in Lubavitcher history. In 1928, a younger man came to Berlin and needed permission to visit the various libraries over there, including the rabbinical seminary library. And that was the Rebbe. And he came to the Sude Eish, who was the Rosh Hashiva, to ask him for permission. And the Sude Eish said, in that case, he needed smicha. So, okay, on what basis am I going to give you smicha? So the Rebbe offered, give me one of your sfarim, and I'll and then afterwards you can fahem me on it, basically. So he gave him the sefer on Pinui Atzamas, this very deep, complicated topic, and the Rebbe came back a day or two, whatever it is, later, with a whole bunch of detailed notes, though they're printed in Rishimus. On different aspects of the topic, bringing various gemaras and various things from poskim and whatnot, and Rabbi Weinberg gave him the smicha, and he had his permission to visit the library. Anyway, so in Sanhedrin, the Gemara talks about the idea that if you have a grave. This that we're talking about over here, about moving a body, is where you found it. You never knew that somebody was buried there before, and all of a sudden you're excavating, all of a sudden you're digging, and you find it. Mashenkin, if you knew all along that it was there, then you don't have permission to move it. assuming that it was meant to be a permanent burial. Again, there are details. There's cases you're allowed to move it if it was lachatchila meant to be a temporary burial, or if you're moving the person to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, or in his own property, or with his family, or whatever. There's various things. So when we say over here, so Tosfos says, when we say over here, matzah prat lamatzri, means here you have a farmer is digging in his field and all of a sudden finds a body, as opposed to where he knew all along that this was once a cemetery, then you're tapping not allowed to start moving the body. Because then we say that he's Kona Makoima. He was meant to be buried there. It was meant to be a permanent place of burial. That was 100 years ago, and the land has changed hands 5 times since then. Doesn't matter. It's a basic word. It's off the banner. So that's one explanation. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that this matzah prat l'matzah. He's talking about this din of having to take of having to take the tevusa. This that we said in the Mishnah that you have to take the roots dirt together with the mess. That only applies if it's that's prat l'matzah. That's something else. So explanation number one again is that matzah prat l'matzah means that if you know these kvarim were there the whole time, you're not allowed to move. Explanation number two, which also Tosfos brings from Rashbam, is this that we said in the Mishnah, that if you find one or if you find two, you can move them, but if you find three, you can't. That's only if all three of them were either known or all three of them were unknown. But if you knew beforehand that one of them was there, and then you discovered the other two or vice versa, then it doesn't have this din of Shonas Kvaris. And later Mephoshim say that the logical reason behind it is that if this place was a known cemetery, if you knew all along that one person is buried over here, you'd expect to know the other two people are buried over here. It doesn't make sense that you would know of one burial and the other two would have been forgotten. So then it's more logical to say, for example, that it was just a temporary thing, that one person, let's say, was buried there maybe on a permanent basis, but the other two just happened to be buried there. And then Rambam gives a third explanation of this matzah prat matzri, that what it means is this din that we're talking about in the Mishnah about when you're allowed and not allowed to move them is only if they're buried and then you dug and found them. As opposed to if the body is sitting there on the surface, then you're allowed to move it l'chatchila. Why? Because then we assume, the Rambam says, because then we assume it's not a Jewish body. If it was a Yid, then somebody would have taken care to bury him. The mitzvah to bury a mess mitzvah, as we learned earlier in the Sefer, even a Kohen Gadol, even a Nazir have to do that. So then it's more logical, it's more likely to assume that this is the body of a goy. And in that case, there's less of an issue of moving it. Yeah, that's matzah prat l'matzah. Mes prat l'harug, when the Mishnah had said that if you find him dead, that means a natural death as opposed to somebody who was killed. Now, why is that? Again, a couple of different reasons. Tosfos says it has to do with the fact that the Gemara is going to say soon that if a mess is missing part of his body, then these dinim don't apply. So a harug would be like that. He's missing his head. He's missing whatever, some other essential part of his body. Another way of looking at it is the reason why we say prat l'harug is because if somebody was killed, then lav davka were they buried here. Just because it's an actual basic forest. They may have just been buried temporarily over here because they were killed. You had to bury them in a hurry, but not that it was ever meant to be a permanent basic forest. Especially, actually, the Rambam has a shitta on this whole business of one, two, or three, that if you have a bunch of bodies that were all buried at the same time, then that all counts as one kvura. So therefore, harug, if you have, for example, Rahman al-Sana pogrom, or, you know, an attack, or something like that, a bunch of people were killed, and they all got buried at the same time, that's all considered one burial. When we say over here in the Mishnah that if you find three, then you have to start checking 20 amas, et cetera, that's talking about normal burials that were done at different times. And when would that be? If it was mess, if they died naturally. So people die naturally at different times, and they're buried at different times. Mushkov, when the Mishnah had said that he's lying, means prapla yoshev, as opposed to if you find the body in a sitting position, because either then it means it was a goyish burial, because Jews are not buried sitting up, or because it means maybe like the person, you know, maybe the person died, let's say, you know, in a landslide or an avalanche or something like that, and, you know, and they happened to be sitting, and therefore they ended up being buried in that position, but not that they were deliberately buried that way. Kedarka, and when it says according to the normal way, as opposed to if you find his head between his legs, meaning like in the fetal position, like sometimes goyim in various places in the world used to bury their dead that way, like curled up, like a baby, then that's also, that's not the way that Jews bury, and therefore if you find it that way, you can assume, again, either that it was an accident, or that it wasn't a Jew. Tani Ula Bar Chinina, Ula Bar Chinina learns a braisa also, mes shechoser, if a mes is missing part of his body, ain lo tfusa, then the din of tfusa, the din that you have to take loose dirt with him, does not apply, v'lo shechonas kvaris, nor does he have the din of shechonas kvaris, this din that we said in the Mishnah, that if you find three such bodies, then if it constitutes a cemetery and you can't move them, doesn't apply from mes to mes shechoser. And Tosfos says, I don't understand why not, maybe it's Allah HaMesh Mishinai.
Yeah,
there shouldn't be any logical reason. The Rosh brings a gusa though that actually that yesh loy tfusa ve'en lahem shchona tfuris. But even if it's missing something, tfusa still applies because it's a logical reason for tfusa is because some of the liquid and whatnot from the mess has gotten absorbed into the dirt. That'll apply equally well whether the mess is chaser or not. But shchona tfuris again only applies to normal to normal expected burials. And if the mess is chaser, then yeah. So in all these other cases, if you find him sitting or in the fetal position or whatever, why not? Or even in the case of Harug, etc., why not? I mean, and because then we say it may well be a goyish body, and therefore you don't have to worry about covered mess in that case. Furthermore, the Braita says, what if you find two bodies? They're lying with head to feet, the head of one and the feet of the other. Like that, in other words. This one's head is in this direction and his feet are in that direction, and this one's head is here and his feet are like that. Also, and again, neither tfusa nor shchonas kvaris applies, again, for the same reason. Jews don't bury that way. Not necessarily there's a bit of a discussion among the Mefarshim, is there a standard way for Jewish burials? And in some places there is. In Yerushalayim, for example, when they bury on Har HaZeitim, they bury the people with their feet facing towards the Har HaBayis. That way, like when they get up at Tchiyas HaMeisim, they'll be able to stand up and walk to and walk directly to Yerushalayim. In most other places in the world, there's not necessarily such a standard thing like that. So you go to the oil, for example, you can see the graves are everywhere in every which direction. But you don't have that one is buried. You still don't have that one person's head is buried in this direction and the other person's feet are buried in that same direction. What if you find three graves? One of them was previously known, and two of them you're first discovering now. Or you find two, or one, it says on the side of here, that you discovered for the first time, and two of them you knew from before. And again, another gear says yesh lahem. Tfusa does apply, but I don't have shchonas kvaris, because again, the logic that if it was a real shchonas kvaris, either all of them would have been forgotten, or all of them would be remembered. There's no reason that one would be remembered and two not, or vice versa.
And therefore you can move them.
Maisib Rabbi Yeshiva, it happened once, story with Rabbi Yeshiva, Shabbat Kamatha Shnaim Yidurim Be'echa Tchila, that he was searching, and he found two graves that were previously known, and one that he first discovered for the first time. He thought in that case, well, we have a Shchonas Kvaris over here. We can't move them, and we have to assume the area is coming. Amalei Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva tells him, Kosh Yagaita Lurik Yagaita. All this hard work that you did was for nothing. This that you had to check, this that you found this third body and you think that the Shchonas Kvaris. No, what Amr Shchonas Kvaris El Gimel you're doing on the Shloish Tchila. The whole concept of Shchonas Kvaris only applies if you have three that were known or three that were unknown. Then we said Noth one vest for Sasa, that you take the bodies along with the Tfusa, along with the dirt around them.
Three
that were all unknown, right? actually, this idea that I was saying about the logical reason, actually Tosfos brings it over here, that if you have three mesim buried over there, then again, yeah, if you knew of one of them, then we should have known the other ones. So if we didn't, then it means that it was a temporary thing. Okay, no pungat tfusasan, that we said that you take the mesim along with the one or two mesim, along with their tfusa, along with the dirt around them. Heichi dami tfusa, so what does it mean tfusa? The Rosh explains that heichi dami over here is unusual. Usually heichi dami means how do we do it? Here it really means how do we know the concept of tfusa in the first place? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Chra, because the pasuk says, Yaakov says to Yosef, Unsasani Mitzrayim, you should carry me out from Mitzrayim, to bury me in Eretz Yisrael, which means, Toil Imi, which means that when he says Mitzrayim, now what, obviously, we know he's in Mitzrayim. When he says carry me from Mitzrayim, means some of Mitzrayim, Toil Imi should be taken with me. So therefore, some of the dirt of Mitzrayim. Now, all the Mephoroshim ask on this, Yaakov was never buried in Mitzrayim. Not even temporarily. They embalmed him over there, and then they immediately brought him to Eretz Yisrael. So what kind of a Mitzrayim Toil Imi? There is a day. Yeah, they were embalming him, whatever. But they were. They didn't. He wasn't. Tfusa would be if the body is buried in the dirt, buried in the ground. Then there's tfusa. Yaakov was never buried in Mitzrayim, even temporarily.
He was
informed. Yeah, the Yaakov says, yeah, yeah. So different possibilities. Mepharshim talk about the Tosfos Yom Tov says that you're right. You actually can't learn from Yaakov. It's really only an asmachta. A couple of other Mepharshim discuss different possibilities. The Chidah brings an interesting thing. In Pesach Einayim, he brings from Reb Gershon Kitever, the Baal Shem Tov's brother-in-law, that we learn Fakeh. Why was Yaakov insisting that I have to be taken to Israel right away and not buried in Mitzrayim, even temporarily? Okay, so you have the reasons Rashi gives on the pasuk over there. I don't want the Mitzrayim to start worshipping me. The ground is eventually going to become life, etc. But even temporarily, I mean, all those things are long-term. Why not? Yeah, but even there's a Gilgal Machilas. It's a long-term thing. So what's the verse? He says, that's just it, the Reb Gershon Kitever says. Yaakov didn't want that they should have to take any of the dirt of Chutz La'aretz with him and then bring it to Eretz Yisrael.
Especially
Eretz Yisrael. So that itself shows that otherwise, if they had buried him, they would have to. And therefore, that shows it in.
They have to take the dirt.
Okay. But Kamashiva, incidentally, by the way, this whole business about Tfusa, a number of poskim say that actually this only applies in those days in Eretz Yisrael because it's not so much a matter of, there's actually a bit of a discussion, what's the reason behind this Tfusa business? Is it a matter of covered up mess because you have to bury the mess, including all the fluids and everything that may have leaked out, and then those get absorbed into the dirt? Or is it a matter of to make sure there's no tumah left behind? If it's a matter of tumah, then nowadays tumah v'tahara is not really an issue because all of us are tumah mess anyway. And in fact, a number of the post-Machronim say that this whole concept of tefusa is not really applied nowadays. If a mess has to be moved from one place to another for whatever reason, for any of the reasons that you're allowed to in halacha, then we don't do the tefusa business. We just take the mess himself. Based on that idea, that the tefusa is mainly in order to make sure that Eretz Yisrael remains tahor. So if it's in the chutzpah, or if even in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, where everybody is tummy mess anyway, then it's less of an issue. But Kamashiv Tfusa, how much is the amount of Tfusa? Peter Shir Belozer, Tzadik it says over here, take it out because it means actually Reb Elazar the Amora. Notel Ofer Tichayach, what you do is you take all the loose dirt, because that loose dirt, why is it loose? And the stomach has absorbed stuff from the mess. The Chayfer Bebsula Gimel Esbois, and furthermore, what you do is you dig into the undug ground 3 Esbois. You dig down until you find ground that has never been dug up, which you can tell, it's more compact. And then you dig out 3 esbois of that as well, and take all that together with the mess. Basically, the Gemara says I have a contradiction to that. A Braita says, "V'kamashir tfusa." What's the amount of tfusa? Pirush of laws of tzadik. What you do is as follows: Noitel sakismin. You take the splinters. What splinters? The Tosfos says, for example, the mess was buried, let's say, in a marble urn. So after a while, bits and pieces of the marble fall off, break off. And then get mixed in. That's the splinters we're talking about. Rashi says that we're talking about an aren made out of wood. So again, it's splinters. There's a ksosos, and you take the ksosos. So again, several different explanations of what ksosos are. Rashi and Tosfos' first explanation is that it means clods of dirt. How did they become clods of dirt? Because they got stuck together with all the fluids, the blood and oil and whatever that came out of the mess. Tosis brings a couple of other possibilities of what kosis can mean. It can also mean kososis. It can also mean they used to put spices in with a mess. Sometimes they put in like spice, ground up spices or whatever, I guess to help absorb the odor or whatever. So inevitably those absorb some of the fluids from the mess. And then a third possibility Tosis says is that kososis means stuff that's worn out, like I guess the worn out bits of tachrichim or whatever. Anyway, so you take that, the Zerdika Safadoyin, you throw away anything which is certainly not from the mess, because then there's no reason to take it along. You set aside anything which is a suffix, whether it has anything in the mess in it, because you don't want to bury it with the mess, because there's no reason to. But on the other hand, you don't bury other things with the mess other than himself and the Sechrechim, basically. On the other hand, you don't want to just throw them away and then let other people find them, because if they do contain anything in the mess, then there'll be a problem with Truma. So therefore, you set them aside in a private place where people can't get a hold of them. The rest all combined to help make up the shear tumma, the most of the frame of the mess, which we learned before, two leg bones and a thigh bone or whatever. So everything else combines to that as far as tumas maga masa and oil. All the roiva atzomis, it also combines as far as making up the quarter calf of bones, which we said before, also in the tamer, in any of those ways. L'mloi tavad rakov, and also it combines together to make up the ladle full of rakov, of dust from the mess, that also we learned a couple of weeks ago in the tamer as well. Which brings the question, Rashi asks the question then, we learned before you only have rakov if the mess was buried was buried without clothes in a wooden and in a marble coffin. Yeah, so how are we talking about over here? According to Rashi's explanation, that the guy was buried in a wooden coffin, and according to Tosfos, that kosos might mean spices or whatever. So what kind of rakov? So there's two different explanations. One is that Rashi himself brings over here that if you have, let's say, for example, other people who were buried like that in a way that they have rakov, then rakov from this nest can be mitzvah and can all combine together with it. There's other answers. There's other answers as well. One of them is that, in fact, maybe our Gemara argues with that Gemara 2 weeks ago. And another possibility is that let's say the person was buried in the Arin Shoshayish, he was buried in the marble coffin, and therefore you have rakov. Later on, let's say the bottom of the coffin broke, and so now you have some of that dust is mixed in with the dust under the mess. You can't tell now what's rakov and what's the original dirt over there. So that's what we're saying, that it combines together.
Rakov
is the dust that the mess decays into. Yeah. Anyway, the bottom line is that we see over here that there's no business about choifu b'psula gimel atzvois. All we mentioned is you take all the loose stuff that you find around there, the kismin and the kosisos and whatever, but you have nothing about having to dig into the dirt. The answer is hudama ki'aitana, very simple. Rabbi Lozer, the Amora, has another tana to base himself on. Titania, b'chama shir tfusa. Another bright says, what's the shir of tfusa? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum ben Azai, you take the loose dirt, and then you dig into the undug soil another 3 etzvos, which is exactly what the laws of the Amorah say. Basula literally means virgin, so therefore it means virgin soil that's never been dug. Incidentally, this Rabbi Yochanan over here, Tosfos points out, usually Rabbi Yochanan's stam is Rabbi Yochanan the Amorah, but here this is a braisa, it can't be. So it has to be the Atana Rabbi Yochanan. Tosfos says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. In Tolos Tanoim Amaroyim, from Hyman, he discusses it. He says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri can't be saying in the name of Ben Azai. He's older than Ben Azai. So he says maybe it's a different Tana named Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, then the Mishnah continued, Bodekid Menu, that you then start, once you find these three Mesim, then you start checking another 20 Amos away. Amar Rava, Bodak Upina, what happens if you checked and you found one mess and then you removed it before you checked any further? Bodak Upina, and then you checked more and you found another one. Bodak Vashkach, and then you checked and found a third one. So now ultimately it turns out then there were three Mesim over here, but by the time you found the third one, two of them have already been moved elsewhere. Loi hai machnile gabeha nochtre, so you can't take this third one and move it to where you move the other two, because already at this point you find it is a shonach kvarit, the first two shouldn't have been moved in the first place. Veloi hani tre le gabeha echad, but you also don't have to move the other two back to where this person is. The ones that you moved already, in other words, what's done is done. But the third one already, once you establish that now this was a shonach kvarit, you can't move the third one. Ikadamri, another version of this, is Amar Rava, Kivin Shinitna Rishus Lefanois. No, once you have permission to clear them away, then you're allowed to clear even the third one. Because again, one does not make a shchunas kvaris. You need three to have a shchunas kvaris. So once you've already moved two, once you have permission to move two, because you didn't know there was a third one there at the time, then already you're able to move the one also. He by himself does not make a shchunas kvaris according to the second version. According to that second version. Well, why not? Why shouldn't it be considered shchunas kvaris? You did find three mason there. Okay, two of them have been removed already. So, Amar Shlokish, Ilam Matsu Tiaru Eretz Yisrael. They found an excuse to be Metahar Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that we don't want to make, as much as possible, we don't want to make that the land of Eretz Yisrael, the areas in Eretz Yisrael are Tomei. So as much as possible, fine. You find three of them at shchunas kvaris, and we said before, maybe halachal moshe mitzinai, fine. You have no choice. You have to leave them, and you have to designate. You have to mark the place. We learned way back in Moed Katan that you have to mark the place with cement, not cement actually, with plaster that you pour around there, so that the koyanim and oisei taharis and whatever know to stay away. But other than that, you don't want to. You want as much as possible to try and say that Eretz Yisrael is tahar for the sake of taharis. And therefore, once you already removed two mesim, then we don't want to assume that the third mess, we don't want to make a shchunas kvaris if we don't have to, basically. If we had found all three of them before any of them were moved, yeah, you have no choice. It's a shchunas kvaris. But once you already moved two, you go ahead and move the third. The point is, as long as you don't find three together, we're saying. Incidentally, the Aruch has a little bit of a different explanation of the Stila Matsu. The word ilah, the way we have it spelled here in the Gemara, means something like an excuse. It could also be spelled ilah with an ayin in the middle, and therefore the ilah with an ayin yud lamed ayin aleph means a rib. So it's a rib, a selah. Yeah. So therefore the Aruch explains that what it means is your Shlokish is saying that at one point there was a chazaka that some part of Eretz Yisrael is Tomei. They searched around until finally they found one rib. And they said, you know what? The chazaka we can assume was because of this one rib was there. Once we remove that, then we can assume the place is tar. We might mention the Zvachim, by the way, an interesting thing, interesting discussion between the Tanoim over there that one time they found bones someplace, I think, near the Bais Hamikdash or something, and they were concerned. You have a real issue of Tumah V'Tahara over there. Rabbi Yeshua, I think it is, points out over there that, look, I mean, you know, if you're going to go like that, I mean, yes, Eretz Yisrael at various times, many people have been killed in it. All the people who were killed by Nebuchadnezzar's armies way back before that, the people who were killed in the Mabul, but still, we don't say in the Suffolk that Eretz Yisrael is Tomei.
This Eretz Yisrael, we're talking about the whole depth of the land, or just the first, let's say, 5 amos or 10 amos?
Yeah, as far as you're digging. I mean, we don't assume. I mean, again, nowadays it's not really so. Nowadays we assume we're all Tomei Mess, and when Mashiach comes, we'll have to take a deal with the entire Eretz Yisrael. But in those times, yeah. I mean, obviously, if there's a mess 100 amos underground and nobody's ever seen it, okay, what can you do? You know, I mean, in special cases, I mean, we learned in Sukkah, for example, how they used to all the extra precautions that they used to take for the kids who they sent to get the part out the water for the part out, to sprinkle the Kohen Gadol, how they had all these elaborate precautions to prevent even the possibility of them becoming Tomei Tumas HaTohim. Similarly, the Bais Hamikdash was built with arches on top of arches, again to block the Tumah from going through no matter what, the ramp they made to the causeway that they made to bring out the part of Adruma out to the Harazesim was also built like that. So in special cases they would do like that to make sure that no matter what, even if there's Tumah 1,000 amos underground, that there's no possibility of it getting into you. But on a day to day basis, you know, yeah. Okay. Next question. Bodek me'esrim amavalei mot. So what happens? So now, again, going back to the scenario in our Mishnah, you found 3 kvarim, so now you got a shchona kvarim over here. You got to check 20 amas away. What happens if you check 20 amas and you didn't find anything? Ma'i, then what's the din? Amar Rav Menashe bar Yumi, Amar Rav, shchona kvarim. Nevertheless, we do consider it a shchona kvarim. My timer, why is that? Amar Shlokish, again, Ilam Matzav Tiyaru Eretz Yisrael. Now, what does this mean? There's a few different possibilities. Okay, so there's a few different possibilities that Tosfos and the Rosh discuss what this last piece of Gemara means. Tosfos says that when we say that if what does it mean? You checked 20 amos. Let's say you only checked in one direction 20 amos. Do you have to check in all the other directions as well? Maybe not. So Rav Shashi is saying, Shechunas Kvaris, meaning, yes, we have to assume the three that we found so far have their Shechunas Kvaris, but we don't need to look any further. Fine, you didn't find in 20 Amos in one direction, then fine. Elam Matsu V'Tiyo Eretz Yisrael, we use any possible excuse to declare Eretz Yisrael Tahor, we're not going to make you start looking in the other direction to see if you can dig up Tumah over there. That's one explanation. Then Tosfos brings a second explanation, which is that what happens if you checked, just you dug shallowly, let's say, and you didn't find anything, do you actually have to keep on digging until like you reach the bedrock or Kauka Basula or whatever? Or is it good enough that just you checked on the surface level, the top couple of feet, and you didn't find anything? Tosfos says that that's the second possibility of what the Gemara means over here. The Rosh doesn't like either of those explanations. Because as far as the first one, why should we say just because you looked in one direction means you're potter from looking in the other direction? The Chorah, they could be in any direction. Okay, the Rosh says maybe actually one possibility is that you could argue if the mason were usually put into these niches, if they usually put them in head first so that the feet are sticking out towards the entrance of the niche, towards the opening of the niche, then fine, you could argue maybe you only have to check in the direction of the feet. Because in the direction of the head, you're not going to have any more of these caves. But fine. But if you're going to say not like that, and remember also the niches are in different directions going off the cave, then locked after. And then as far as this business of do you have to check all the way down to the bedrock? Yeah, the Mishnah and all this says that the checking that you have to do involves not just digging up the top couple of feet. It means digging all the way down to the bedrock. Or Kaukab Sula, or water, or whatever it talks about over there, different possibilities in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah, where you know for sure there's nothing underneath it. So rather, the Rosh says that the Gemara's question is, therefore, do we consider you, so again, you check 20 Amos, then are you allowed to move the original, are you allowed to move the original three? And the answer is, and the answer is that no, Shechunas Kvaris, those three themselves make up a Shechunas Kvaris. In which case, the Rosh takes out the line, Omer Shlokish Ilam Lots of Tiyur Ezer Tzitzirol, because according to him, that's not relevant over here. That just, we say those three are Shkunas Kvarit, fine, you didn't find any other Kvarit, fine, let's say they started the cemetery, they buried these three masons over here, and then they never got around to using the rest of it because everybody left. You don't have to dig anymore, maybe, but you're around 20 Amos or whatever, but you can't move these three. You have to assume these three are meant to be a permanent thing. Next Mishnah, also on the subject, not really on the subject of Raglayim Odover, but on the subject of Safek Tumah and Safek Tahara, so it sort of reverts back to what we were learning before about the Nazir that went into the cave to Tovel. Kol Safek Negoyim, any case where a person is a Safek of Taras, Betchila Tahar, at the beginning, if there's a Safek at the beginning, then he's Tahar. Absalom Nizkek Tumah before he becomes established as Tomei. What, not established, before he comes into a period that he might be Tomei. Meaning, let's say you have a case like this. Imagine if two people come to a Kohen. One of them, let's say, has a spot of Tzaraas the size of a grist, the size of a bean, which is the minimum amount for it to be considered Tzaraas to be Tomei. The other one has a bigger spot, the size of a cellar. So what does the Kohen do? If neither of them have white hair or michi or whatever, he locks them both up for a week, and in a week he comes and checks it. Now, let's say the next week comes at the end of the week, he checks them, both of them is now the size of a cellar, but we forgot which one had the original one figures. But now we have one of them there and nothing's happened, he's supposed to be quarantined for another week to see if anything changes. The other one, it grew, and therefore he would be mukhlat, he'd have to be sent out of the city, but we don't know which one is which.
Now we know.
Yeah, we don't. Again, we knew one of them had Kigris, the other one had Kisela. At the end of the week, both of them had Kisela, but we forgot which one had the Gris. So therefore, neither of them had ever been established as Tomei, because both of them are still in the quarantine stage. Therefore, we say they're Tomei. Therefore, we say that. Therefore, we say the Sophic is Tomei. Mishinizka Kutuma Sveke Tomei. On the other hand, once we get involved with declaring them Tomei, then a Sophic would be Tomei. Let's say a similar scenario. Imagine you have now that both. No, but we don't know which one. But that's what we mean. That's the kind of suffix we mean, though. That's the kind of stuff you can see. So it turns this over here, gives us a scenario. Okay. No, but we don't know. So therefore, we have to be mitzayer both of them as suffix. Mishinizka kutuma is. Okay, but it's a kind of suffix. Okay. Now, let's take another scenario. Again, one of them started out with a grid, one of them started out with a seller. At the end of a week, both people's spots are larger than a seller. But now, okay, both of them grew, so obviously both of them are tame. Later on, both of them shrink down to the size of a seller. So now, if you get down to it, so the one, they grew larger than a seller, and now they shrank down to the size of a seller. So, if you get down to it, so one of them, it grew and then shrank, but it's still larger than it was originally, so he's going to be tummy. The other one, on the face of it, his saras is now the same size it was originally when it started out. He ought to be tummy. But again, because we lost track which one started as a grist and one started out as a casella, and both of them had a period when they were both declared tummy because of the pisayin, because it grew larger, that's what it means. Shinizka katuma, sfeke tummy, misafik, we consider both of them tummy.
So before you said Mishapet, we consider
that. That's exactly what we say. The difference is Mishachal and Nizkakotuma versus Mishanizkakotuma. The first case was the Kohen had not had an occasion to declare either of them Tome, yeah? The second case is the Kohen had already declared both of them Tome. Again, week one, they come to the Kohen on Rosh Hashanah with their spots of Saras. The Kohen locks them up for a week. Zion Tishrei comes and checks them. Both of them are now the size of a seller. We say, no, myself, if they're both tahar, because neither one of them ever was declared tamei by the Kohen, because they only had their 1 week quarantine. But that's it then. Both of them are myself, are tahar, until we know for sure that it
grew.
But one of them started out of a seller. One of them started out of a seller, and a week later is still a seller. The other one started as a gris and now is a seller. But since the Kohen had never declared either one Tomei, and we lost track which one was which, therefore they're both Tahar. But on the other hand, let's say that on Rosh Hashanah, one had a seller, they both came to the Kohen. On Rosh Hashanah, you're not supposed to see them on Yom Tov, but okay, whatever. The Kohen locks them both up. A week later, Zion Tishrei checks them. Both of them have larger than a seller, which means now both of them for sure are Tomei. They both, obviously, the Tzaraas has both grown. Now, a few days later, he checks, and one of them has, and both of them are back down to a seller. So what do you have? One of them has grown and then shrunk a little, but still larger than it was originally. The other one grew and then shrank exactly down to where it was to begin with. Therefore, one of them should be Tomei and one of them should be Tahar. But because the Kohen had declared both of them Tomei previously, because it grew larger than a seller, and now we're not sure which one is which, Misafik, they're both Tomei. Gemara says, Menahani Mili, how do we know this whole concept? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Amar Krav, because the Pasuk says, L'taharoi o L'tamoi, that the Kohen has the rules of Tzaraas to declare him Tomei or to declare him Tahar. Since the Pasuk uses the expression of Tahara first, that implies that if we have a suffix to begin with, we should start by declaring him Tahar, which is what the Mishnah was saying. And the question is, by that logic, if the idea is that the Torah began first with the word Tara, then it should mean any case of Sophic. You always prefer to call him Tahar rather than calling him Tomei. No, rather, this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav was said in connection with a different din. Mishnah says, Im baheres kodna l'seir lovan, if the white spot, Saras, came before the white hair, Tomei, then the person is Tomei, as the Pasuk says. If Im seir lovan kodem l'kodem l'baheres, what if the white hair came first and then a baheres grew around it? Tomei. A baheres is a spot of Saras, yeah. Then he's Tomei. Sophic, what if you have a Sophic which came first, Saras or the hair? Tomei. V'Rabbi Yeshua Amar Kiha. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says Kiha. My Kiha, so what does Kiha mean? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Kiha v'tar. It means kiha literally means that it's dim, that it became dull. We know that Saras is only one of four colors, four shades of white. Four shades of white, what are they? The color of snow, the color of clean wool from like a newborn lamb, the color of an egg membrane, and the color of the plaster that they use in the heichal. Four shades of white that make a person tummy a saras. Any other shade, any duller shade than that is not saras. Off-white, all the different, So when Rabbi Yeshua Omer Kiya, my Kiya, or when Rabbi Yehuda Kiya the Torah, it means that it's the equivalent, Rabbi Yeshua considers it, it's as if the Tzaraf became dim, became duller than one of the four shades of white, and therefore the person is Tahar. In other words, it's a way of saying that because the Sophic, and therefore he's Tahar. Incidentally, by the way, there's this subject of Beharis Kodmel of Seir Lovin or Seir Lovin Kodmel Beharis is a very famous story in Bava Metzia where this was right before Rabbah passed away. The Eidishter and the Mesipta Dirikiyah are arguing over this very din of Beharis Kodmel of Seir Lovin if it's a Sufik, whether it's Tomei or Tar. And they say, you know what, let's ask Rabbah Bar Nachmeni. He has this unique knowledge of Goyim and Olos. And then he's hiding out over there in the forest because the government officials are pursuing him. So as he's dying, as the Shema is leaving, he calls out Tahar Tahar, Rabba. He realized as the Shema is starting to go up that what's going on over there, what this discussion is going on in Shemayim, and he declares Tahar. Nevertheless, there's a number of Maimorim on the subject in the Kodesh Torah and in Maimorim of the later Rebbeim analyzing what exactly happened over here. Why is the Eidishter saying Tomei? Why is the Eidishter saying Tahar? Why is the Mesivta Dirkia saying Tomei? What's the uniqueness of Rabbah getting involved over here? Incidentally, it's interesting. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is actually that sofik tomei, which means basically we're passing, so to speak, against the Eivishter. Okay, fine, turtle leather shemaimi, but it also means we're passing against Rabba, which there's a lot of discussion about that. Why is that? Bechura, I mean, Rabba is a human being. Why shouldn't the halacha be like him? A couple of interesting answers. One is because he said this when his neshama is already half out of his body, on his way, so it's already leather shemaimi. He's not a neshama in a goof anymore.
Right. And even so, it's quite out there, right?
Yeah.
Connected.
And another interesting answer that's given is when you get down to it, how Bechlal do we know the whole story? Rabba was hiding out alone over there in the forest. Nobody was there. How do we know Bechlal that he said Tahar Tahar? They must know it was Ruach HaKodesh. Well, then you're back to Turtle of the Shemayim. You can't pass him based on Ruach HaKodesh. Anyway, like I said, there's a number of Maimoric Siddurs that discuss the deeper implications of all of this. But anyway, so Rabbi Yeshua Amar Kiha, my Kiha, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Kiha Vatar, that Rabbi Yeshua says it's as if the Tzaraf became duller, and therefore it's Tzar. Mefarshim have many, many other different explanations of what Kiha means over here, especially because in the printed Mishnayot over there, it's printed Kiha with a Kuf. So there's a lot of possibilities. It means Meloshet Hakei Eschinov, like Rabbi Yeshua found it very hard to accept that the Chachamim are saying Tomei, and he held it Tzahar, or Kiha, actually, some of the Mefarshim were swaying, like he gathered together a bunch of Talmidim to declare it Tzahar, whatever. Okay, the question is, Vidum of Kiha v'Tomei, how do you know? Maybe Rabbi Yeshua means Kiha, on the contrary, he means that it's Tomei. Which Tosfos says, I mean, in that case, wouldn't he be saying as the same as the Tanakhama? Okay, maybe the Tanakhama says he's Tomei b'Sofik, and Rabbi Yeshua says not even Sofik, it's Vadai. This is where we get Omakra, because the Pasuk says, that to make him Tahar or to make him Tomei, since the Pasuk mentions the word Tahar first, then it's based on that Rabbi Yeshua says that in this case, Sofik, we should say that he's Tahar rather than he's Tomei. That's the Pasuk he's basing himself on. Because we start with Tahara. So therefore, according to the second version, the Gemara is saying, so the din of our Mishnah about Sofik, about Anshul and Nizkak or Mishnah Nizkak, fine, we don't really have a pasuk for that. But what do we use the pasuk for? We use it to, how does Rabbi Yeshua know his din, and in that particular case of Sofik, of Beharis versus Seir Lavan, that he should be Tahara.